Welcome back, Shatter Nation. Welcome back to the one, the only, Mystifying Oracle Radio. Your ghost man, a demon hunter show, Demon Hunter.
That would be me. Can I get a do-over? I think I put my shirt on backwards.
Do-over? No mulligans in radio, pal.
Nobody can see me, I guess.
No mulligans, but anyway, special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Spreaker, the world's listening. How about you? Spreaker.com. Check them out, guys, because that's where we're at. That's a good one. Geeky.
That is a good one.
Yeah. Geeky Antics. Geekyantics.net. Check them out. Good people, good geeks, funny geeks, something like that. Check them out. They are awesome. Of course, friends at Attentive Home Healthcare. Good people willing to help the ones you love in Indianapolis. That's where they're at. AttentiveHHC.com. The SYL Project. Give some love. Share some love. Everybody needs that good old love, Nate.
I need love.
SYLProject.com. Welcome back, world.
Hi, world.
Hi, world. How's everybody doing tonight? I'm so excited. I'm so excited to be back.
You are?
I got a cup of hot, piping hot... Now I forgot what it was. Pumpkin coffee.
Pumpkin coffee. Is it that time of year, Sean?
Oh, man. It's in full force. I was out cutting the grass today.
Last week of summer.
Yeah, seen some of the leaves changing. This is the last week, right? Getting ready to start?
We are in the last. I think there's 4 days left of summer. I believe the official first day of autumn is September 22nd.
Okay, September.
Could be the 21st, but I'm pretty sure it's 22nd. I think the last day of summer is the 21st.
Last day of summer. Okay. Well, anyway, I went to Dallas this week.
You did?
Yeah, I did. And it reminds me of why.
Meet any cowboys?
I love. No cowboys. I was there for work, but it reminds me why I love Maine, Indiana, Midwest, the Yankee parts of our great United States, you know?
You Yankee.
I am a Yankee, but it was 90 degrees there at night, man. You know, you couldn't breathe there at night. There was no wind blowing, and it's just not for me. That's all. It's just not for me.
I remember when we were staying down in New Mexico, and we'd be out in Albuquerque in the middle of the day, and it was like 103 degrees, and you and I would be sitting there going, and we had no pool at our hotel.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And we were just sitting there going, what the heck? And then they'd drive us up to the mountains to shoot, and it would be like 37 degrees.
Yeah, I know it was hot, man. It was burning hot. But anyway, I'm good to be back home. I got off the airplane. I could definitely tell that fall was in the air. I started building the yard stuff this weekend. Remember the Legend of Sleepy Hollow, the Johnny Depp one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The scarecrow from that. I started building it.
Oh.
With the pumpkin head. And of course,
is that going to be your center of decoration this year?
Well, no, it's just going to be one. Actually, center decoration will be a 12-foot-tall clown that you walk through his mouth. Yeah. Big bash.
12-foot-tall clown that you walk through his mouth.
Uh-huh. That'll be your entryway into the Burris Hennigan bash.
Why are clowns so scary, Sean?
I don't know. That brings up a good story, though, Nathan. That brings up a good story. I was, you know, everybody's been losing their mind over this clown thing lately, right?
Oh, yes, yes.
So I was looking up what was going on, and I was at work this week, and I was telling somebody about it, and they said, dude, did you hear down the road from where my work is called Eagle Creek Park? And, you know, it's where a lot of the rich people live and stuff. Like, of course, it's a big lake. It's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I didn't hear about that. Well, apparently here in Indianapolis, Indiana, the clowns have attacked.
Really?
They've infiltrated. But anyway, that's what I was being told. But I don't know. I couldn't find that story anywhere.
I did not find that. However, I did find that there has been one in Ohio.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, are we going into that already?
Oh,
we're not
even
going to talk about our week. Okay, I'll tell it. Another creepy clown encounter reported in Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
As teen says he was chased at the bus stop.
Oh, the team was chased, huh?
Yeah, another report of a creepy clown in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
A 14-year-old student at Columbia North International School was on his way to the bus stop Tuesday at 6:15 a.m. Okay. when a man in a clown mask dressed in all black chased him with a knife, NBC affiliates report. So, you want to go on with this, Sean, or should we save it for the news?
Well, we could, but it's creepy. I mean, you know.
It is creepy, and, you know, that's why if you go to New York City.
Clowns.
It is illegal to wear a mask in Central Park.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You cannot wear – women can walk around topless, but you can't wear a mask.
Well, that's all right.
And that's because of the crime rate. You right. know, it's you can't be walking up to somebody with a mask on. They can't report what you look like.
Right. So. I agree with that. I don't think you should.
Back off, man. I'm a scientist.
Yeah. That's right. The police report they don't know whether it was a prank or a serious event. The attack was followed by multiple reports in the recent weeks. Follows multiple reports in the recent weeks of menacing clowns in Greenville, South Carolina.
That's what
alleging
we read
offering
last
kids
week.
Money to follow them.
Yeah, we read that one last week.
Yeah, so apparently there's also been some reports of false reports of clowns down in the Greenville area.
And that's what I'm going to. I think there's going to be more and more of that, Nate. It's you know how everybody copycats everything.
And so it's really kind of creepy when you think about it. It's not for me. Clowns don't creep me out. Even it didn't creep me out, really. But
really,
the fact that somebody's face is covered bothers me because, like I said, then you have no report of, you know, who attacked you, Mr. Schoonover. Well, he was about 5'9". He had bright red hair on the sides of his head. He had a great big red nose and white skin, and he was really wearing really big shoes.
Yeah. And he made squeaky noises.
Oh, it was Hillary Clinton. I understand.
He made squeaky noises. No, but we were looking into that because I'm going, what's going on here, man? You got terrorists, a-holes out here doing their thing. You got people fighting in the streets. Chicago's a war zone. Now, clowns.
Aren't clowns like one of the signs of the apocalypse?
It should be if it wasn't. But, you know, I was looking it up, Nate, and I was looking for any reason. We had thought for a long time, I said last week, Nathan, I think that this might be a push for the Stephen King movie, It. Do you remember that?
I do.
Because they're remaking Stephen King's It and coming out next month. Anyway, I was checking it out. This comes from our friends at IndieWire. I was just reading about it. This isn't a news story. Creepy clowns roaming South Carolina. Here's the question. Are they viral marketing for Mr. Rob Zombie's new movie, 31?
Oh.
And I forget what guest we had on. He was talking about he's going to be. No, we had Bill. He was from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We've had so many people on. but he's going to be in that movie, and that's what they're talking about. Because on the front cover of 31 is no less, none other than, a creepy clown.
Mm.
And it just says
yeah, 31. But in viral marketing, are you really going to let somebody chase an unsuspecting teen with a knife?
I know that's pushing it. That's pushing it. But, you know, Rob Zombie's known as being grungy.
I would not lay this on Rob Zombie at all. The man's a marketing genius. He wouldn't put himself in a position where he could be. You know, if you even show somebody a knife, officially you've committed assault.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen any knives. No cops have caught these guys with knives. There was one.
Well,
the
recent one in Ohio.
Okay, yeah.
The report was he was chased with a knife.
Well, last year they got one of the guys. He was just walking around Ritzy Richville here in Indiana somewhere, and they said, we're creeped out. And they stopped. He was carrying a stick with balloons on it. And the guy said, you know what? I love Halloween, and I was just walking around because it makes me feel like it's Halloween. And that was it. They let him go. But anyway, update. Saban Films, who is distributing.
What did they say to you when you did that, Sean?
They just said, how's it going? And if I had ID. Anyway, Saban Films, who is distributing Rob Zombie's new movie, 31, has released a statement, Nathan. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. They've released a statement on this very thing. The company and the film 31 are not in any way associated in any way with the creepy clowns and costume characters found roaming the South. Says it's been over a week since the sighting of the creepy clowns had been reported in Greenville and Spartanburg, where your brother was. Spartanburg.
No, my brother's in Greenville.
Greenville. Okay, so he was in Greenville. Since they were reported in those counties in South Carolina. According to the Los Angeles Times, the Greenville County Sheriff's Office said that that several reports have been coming in about scary costume characters who have been appearing in the woods and luring in young kids with money. So I don't know. Something's going on though, man. It's a group. It's some kind of
now
performance act.
Don't get me the wrong way here, but Greenville, South Carolina, Spartanburg, South Carolina, very close to Clemson.
Yeah.
College. Columbus, Ohio, obviously close to the college. What if this is some sort of new college prank?
Well, that's true, but how's it happening everywhere?
Well, the fraternities are nationwide, are worldwide. You know, if you belong to Alpha Beta Omega in Florida, Alpha you Beta. Are a brother to the member of Alpha Beta Omega in, you know, California.
Omega.
Omega.
What was the name of the fraternity in Revenge of the Nerds? Do you remember? Don't Google it.
Lambda, Lambda, Lambda.
Oh, my God. What was the name of the jocks?
That I don't know.
Alpha Omega or something like that.
Was it Alpha Omega? Yeah. That would make sense for jocks.
I don't know. Alpha Omega.
They didn't know the rest of the vowels.
Nerds. I liked it.
Nerd.
It was my favorite. Ogre was my favorite. Good guy, man. I really did. I enjoyed him very much.
Biggie fries.
Yeah. He wants a Biggie fries. Anyway, guys, the clowns, creepy as heck. That's all I know about that. But what else are we going to talk about? So we got the clowns this week.
I want to send out a wonderful I love you to my wife this week, Sean. It was our fourth wedding anniversary.
Oh, that's right. Happy anniversary.
That's right. We went for a wine tasting. Can you imagine me going to someplace for alcohol, Sean?
No, I cannot.
I know. But we went to a wine tasting for our anniversary, followed by a wonderful dinner at a Louisiana-style restaurant.
Monkey.
It wasn't real Louisiana food, but it was yummy.
It wasn't real? Okay.
And then we went to see the Blair Witch Project 2, or the Blair Witch 2.
You know, I heard about that, and was it... Yeah. Was it good?
It was quite humorous.
Okay. So I hit that one around the head.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking, guys, or if excuse me, you're looking to take your girl to a movie with a few jump scares in it, yeah. To have her up in your lap while you're on a date,
it's a place to go.
Something not too scary for Halloween. Mm-hmm. This is a good film.
It is.
I would say that there are a lot of interesting concepts in it where they cover the possibility of how the Blair Witch still exists, how people go missing, all that fun stuff. I don't want to spoil it for people if they want to see it, but there is definitely some explanation if you're willing to go deep. It's not on the surface. If you're willing to go deep into the story, there's some explanation on what the Blair Witch is, how these occurrences happen. But honestly, if you're looking for a really good Halloween flick, this isn't the one, folks. If you're looking for something really spooky, you can wait till this comes out on DVD and rent it from Redbox for a dollar.
Yeah, just go rent it, everybody.
Yeah.
Always go to Redbox, but people become so lazy, they don't
want to. They don't even go to Redbox anymore.
It's down on the corner. It's at McDonald's. I don't want to go.
I can't stop on my way home. They'll actually be in the grocery store buying dinner, and they're like, oh, man, the red box is 25 feet over there. I don't want to walk all the way over there. I'm already in line. I'm just going to. We used to have to go to stores, folks, that were just dedicated to movies. Do you know that?
That was sort of the good old days, man, because I remember seeing Sammy Terry in there. But, Nathan, before we go into that, tonight's guest, right?
Tonight's guest.
Probably should talk about tonight's guest. Am I doing it? You're doing it.
You can do it if you want. Go ahead.
He is an American actor known for playing the character James Hurley in the cult television series Twin Peaks and its prequel film Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, as well as his role as Private Luden Downey in A Few Good Men. He has appeared in numerous films, among them Gladiator Hits, Vibrations, All She Ever Wanted, Criminal Affairs, and Alien Lockdown. He's also known as the voice of Kurt in the video game Unlimited Saga, and so much more. Yeah? Tonight...
Yes.
Actor James Marshall stops by, guys. The American actor, the motorcycle rider, right?
Yes.
From the little place known as Twin Peaks. Yeah. Anyway, he's stopping by tonight, guys. Only at the home of the Mystifying Oracle Radio, right here on your Nathan
Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show.
You heard him. Tonight, baby. Cannot wait. This is a big one. We've been getting some huge, 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 huge guests, and I'm so excited for that.
That's and I'll say, I I was a huge fan of A Few Good Men. It's one of those movies when it comes on, I have to watch it.
Right.
If I'm flicking around and I see that, I stop.
Are you going to do that to him tonight? You can't handle the truth. Are you going to do it?
Who was the pickup private? Private Loudon?
Yeah. Yeah. Who was it?
But the pickup private, he's the guy who picks him up and takes him to from place to place. They also call him that because he can pick up girls in New York City.
Yeah, bring him back. And we had Kiefer Sutherland in that. We had Tommy Cruise.
Sutherland's got a new show coming out. Did you see that, Sean?
No, I didn't. What's the name of it?
Yeah, it's a new show where he plays, you know, that when the president and everybody else is in session, if he's doing a joint house.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was looking up something while I was doing that. You asked me a question while I was looking something up.
Right.
If the president is speaking to the joint houses, uh-huh. One member of the house at least has to be kept safe in case I can't hear a thing that's going on.
You can't hear nothing's going on?
No.
What's going on?
There's music playing.
What do you need to be hearing?
Well, I thought you were talking.
I couldn't
hear anything.
No, I wasn't talking.
Oh, okay. The entire government is in one place and the president is speaking, one member of the cabinet the House or the Senate has to be kept aside in order to protect the line of succession in case everybody's killed when uh-huh. they're all gathered together.
Yeah.
And in this new film or this new series that Kiefer Sutherland is going to be working on, he is the one person that's kept aside and the entire government gets wiped out.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like our dream, but I'm not a terrorist, folks. I think that's kind
you
of like
communist.
Right
You're
now.
Communist. Communist.
But he has to take over for the president, and I got the feeling that he's not really enthused about the job.
Yeah. Well,
so I'm kind of looking forward to this one. It's called Designated Survivor,
mm-hmm.
and it should be an interesting film.
Well, good. I'm looking forward to it, too. You know, we had some bad news. Every once in a while we do on this show, Nate, especially since we've been on the air almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Some of our guests are going to pass away.
Yes.
You know, well, this week, nobody that was on our show passed away, but somebody that was very tightly affiliated with Mr. Bob Carter. Of course, Sammy Terry. You remember that was a huge loss for us here, Nate, when Bob died. We were one of the last, if not the last, interview guys Indiana's late night cherished horror host Sammy Terry did ever. We were so. If you guys want to go back in the archives at ghostanddemon.com, look up archives. You can check out the Bob Carter Sammy Terry interview. And of course, he passed away maybe 3 years ago. But they had a whole morning program thing. Nate, they had Janie, which would come on with puppets. She was a lady that sang and stuff like that. Then you would have Sammy Terry on Friday nights.
Right.
And then, of course, after school with Cowboy Bob and the Roundup Corral. Yeah. So this story comes from our good friends here locally at Fox 59. Guys, Central Indiana TV legend Cowboy Bob has died after suffering a possible heart attack. We're straight out of Indianapolis, guys. Very sad. Local television legend Bob Glaze, more commonly known as Cowboy Bob, has passed away at the age of 73, according to his family. Bob's sister-in-law, Linda, confirms to Fox 59 that he passed away around noon Friday after suffering a possible heart attack. The funeral arrangements are still pending, guys. From 1970 to 1989, Bob hosted the afternoon cartoon show on WTTV4. He appeared first as the host of Chuckwagon Theater before it became known simply as Cowboy Bob's Corral. For generations of Hoosiers, Cowboy Bob was an after-school companion who entertained with his cast of TV characters. Cowboy Bob also educated and engaged his audience subtly on issues like fire safety. Apparently you didn't watch that, Nathan.
I did not. Yeah. I was playing with matches at that time.
I was burning something down. Anyway, you know, I wanted to be, if possible, a surrogate brother, father, to the kids out there. And that was my motivation, said Glaze in an interview with CBS Channel 4 earlier this year. Anyway, many goes on to say many have taken to social media to say how sorry they are. So That's it, guys. Cowboy Bob, rest in peace, sir. He is a local legend, age 73, passed away Friday. You will be missed. Bob Glaze, everybody.
Indeed. It's one of those things when you and I talk to somebody and it just hurts when you know somebody you grew up. I remember when, what was the Crocodile Hunter?
Oh, yeah.
You remember when he passed? You didn't even know him, but you felt like you'd lost somebody that was close to you.
Yeah, Steve Irwin. Course. Yeah, that you're right. And you know, doing this show, being entertainers, having had our little shot at Hollywood and everything, even our friends that come on, John Kassir, the Crypt Keeper, they even started telling us, well, you guys know what we mean, you know, when they talk about the field of entertainment and stuff. And even though we haven't made it to the level of what they made it, which is, you know, legendary, if you're in the entertainment field, guys, you have this bond, wouldn't you say, Nate?
I would, that the people that are your guests, who become close to you during the interview.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you go into their lives. Nate and I get to talk to them off the air a lot and say things and hear things that you guys don't always hear. We try to share with you. You know, like Nathan said, I'm proud to be part of the entertainment field, even though I think they know the struggle, Nate. I think that's it. They know the struggle of producing an art form, whether it be radio, acting, writing, whatever. They know the struggle of doing something, trying to perform to make the world better, and, you know, the challenges. And I think there's just an automatic connection, at least for some.
I'm more trying to take over the world than make it better. It will be better once I've taken over.
Anyway, Nate, we're running out of time. Oh, you hear the music, guys. It's always fresh. It's always exciting. Well, sometimes. It's strange and weird, and it's straight from the G&D show vaults. And it starts right
now.
Woohoo, woohoo, woohoo. I had to cue up that music. Dude, that's the best music we've ever had on this show. It is.
And it came to us for only $15.99.
No, it's like $20, actually. Hey, but you know what? Nobody can sue us.
That's right.
Nobody.
You folks have no idea how hard it is just to get music for a TV show.
Oh, it's crazy, dude. It's crazy.
Or a radio show.
Show, especially when you're paying for it yourself. Yeah. It's like, hey, there's a good deal. You can get this song for $70.
Yeah.
Anyway, first up to bat, Nate, you want me to take it?
Sure, go ahead.
Giant inflatable moon rolls through traffic in Chinese city? Yeah, giant. You heard him right. Just from our friends at the UPI. Thanks, guys. You're so cool.
Have you seen the video of this yet, Sean?
No, I didn't get to see the video. I seen the picture though. It says that's no moon. It's an inflatable replica carried away by typhoon winds.
Yes.
Drink up, guys. Get ready, Nate. We didn't tell him about drinking.
Oh, that's right, folks. That's right. It's G&D in the news. That's weird news that Sean and I take right out of the papers because we like the titles. Of course, we haven't read them yet, so we make a lot of mistakes. Every time we make a mistake, you take a drink. That's why it's called the G&D drinking game. Of course, if you're driving your car listening to this show, we ask that you do not play the G&D drinking game because we're not going to pay your bail. And if you're doing anything important tonight, like, say, voting or, I don't know, anything, please. Listen responsibly.
Okay, foo's who? Drink up, guys. China, September 16th, shocked commuters in China captured video of a giant inflatable moon rolling through traffic when it was carried away by powerful winds. The moon, one of several inflatable moons designed for revelers to take photos with amid cloudy weather during the mid-autumn festival, came free of its perch Wednesday in foo's who? Drink up, guys. Fujian province, drink up, guys, and ended up rolling over cars on a busy road. The moon was carried by gusts from Super Typhoon Meranti, drink up, guys, which had yet to make landfall in China Wednesday, but was sending powerful winds ahead of it. Anyway, they put a video on here, guys. That's what it was. That's no moon. That's a battle station. Yeah. That's what it was, Nate.
I believe it. It's
it was a blowing moon.
You know, I do remember recently the new Star Wars movie came back out on HBO or Cinemax, one of them, and I was watching it, and I loved the line where they're saying, so it's another Death Star, and they're like, no, this was the Death Star. This is the new one, and it's a giant planet. And they go, so it's bigger. How do we blow it up? They all blow up.
Well, that was Han Solo.
Yeah.
So it's a little bigger. So what?
Hey, Sean, Stephen King compares Donald Trump to Cthulhu.
They all float.
Cthulhu issues angry denial.
Wasn't that Chalutha or something?
Cthulhu. Cthulhu. The ultimate deplorable wants nothing to do with Donald Trump. Oh. A parody Twitter account set up for Cthulhu, one of the great old ones, created by early 20th century author H.P. Lovecraft, took offense to being linked to Republican presidential candidate by novelist Stephen King.
Oh.
But the Cthulhu account, which claims Cthulhu is running for president, quickly fired off a denial. And it was a absolute gem, packed with references from Stephen King's many books.
Okay.
So, Cthulhu not running for president, people. Sorry.
You know, I think perhaps, Steve-O, I love you, but stick to writing, sir, and stay out of politics, really. I mean, really. You know, okay, that's we'll leave it at that, Nathan. But yeah. Hey, another creepy clown, Nate.
Yes, this is the Ohio story I was telling you about.
Yeah, I just seen that. I had to grab it. Another creepy clown encounter reported in Ohio as teen says he was. You want to finish that one? Because you started.
No, go ahead. You started it. Finish.
Anyway, our friends Chicago 5, thanks, guys. Another report of a creepy clown encounter has surfaced, this time in Columbus, Ohio. A little close, Nate. A 14-year-old student at Columbus North International School was on his way to a bus stop Tuesday around 6:15 a.m. when a man in a clown mask dressed in all black chased him with a knife. Wow. It's a little early for serial killers, isn't it?
Yeah, clown. They usually wait a few more weeks.
Yeah, you think. Police told NBC News the teen managed to get away by throwing a rock at the attacker. Authorities are still canvassing the area in search of the suspect and said they will keep a close eye on the bus stop where the incident occurred. We don't know whether this was a prank or not, Nate. That's what they're saying. But we are taking it seriously. That was police spokesman Denise Alex Bosniz. Drink up, guys. The attacks follow multiple reports, of course, across the U.S. Yeah.
So you still think it's just a promotional thing, Sean?
I don't know, brother. This is getting weird. Do you think maybe it's the asshats known as ISIS trying to dress up like clowns or something?
I don't know. No. That's probably against some religious thing.
Yeah, well.
Hey, Sean, people are freaking out over this convincing photo of the Loch Ness Monster.
Ooh.
Maybe this is the...
Does it have red eye?
Maybe this is the spoil proof of the Loch Ness Monster that Nessie believers have been waiting for years. Maybe it's a bunch of seals. Maybe we just need a strong drink.
Bummer.
Whiskey warehouse worker Ian Bammer snapped this shot of what multiple sources are calling the most convincing Loch Ness Monster photo ever.
That's what I'd say.
Banner, 58. Beaner, 58. Was looking to photograph some red deer, but instead found what he says could be Nessie having an afternoon swim. Oh. He told the Scotsman, "This is the first time I've ever seen Nessie in the loch. I'm not saying that wrong, Sean. It says I would be amazing if I was the first one to find her."
Yeah, but you stuttered. Let him drink.
No, I stuttered because it's spelt wrong.
Let
all right,
them
have
eat
a drink.
Cake.
Bender said.
Yes.
He snapped the shot. Saturday afternoon between the villages of Doris and, get ready, folks,
yes,
in Fergingang in Scotland.
Three drinks, guys. Count them. Three drinks.
Banner told the outlet he bit on the skeptic. He bit? This is, maybe it's because it's from Scotland, Sean, but I'm going to say this word for word.
Okay.
Bammer told the outlet he's bit of a skeptic about Nessie.
Okay.
But he saw his own photo and found himself a believer.
Those guys don't talk well.
No. They don't speak good like us.
Not like us.
Will this go down in history as the evidence finally providing Nessie's existence? Probably not. Whatever it is, we just hope it's friendly. I'm looking at Sean here. It's seals.
Is it seals?
It's seals. It's so seals. Yeah. I'm sorry, folks. This is seals.
Nathan says it's seals, guys, so it has to be.
It's three seals. I'm sorry. This is three seals swimming in the water, and it's so clear. With HD photos nowadays, you can look at it. You can see the mottled skin of the seal in the front, and this kind of makes me believe that every picture that's ever been taken of Nessie, Sean, is just seals.
Oh, no, come on.
Yep, that's what I think.
Somebody said it was a... one person went as far as saying Nessie's been an elephant before. It was the trunk of an elephant. Now, how long can that... are elephants running rampant in the lock there?
It's a new water-breathing mammoth.
I guess. I don't know. But that would be just as weird as a Nessie, having an elephant in the lock. In Scotland. Yeah, Scotland. Anyway, Nate.
Sean.
We got to get ready for break, buddy. Tonight's guest, American actor, played James Hurley in the cult television series Twin Peaks, right? Private Ludden, Downey, and A Few Good Men. He's also appeared in numerous films. Numerous, guys. He was the voice of Kurt in the video game Unlimited Saga. And tonight, Mr. James Marshall shall be in studio. Yeah, right here, the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter, Hugh.
It's Loudon. Loudon down.
Loudon. Did you hear how I did that, though?
Yes.
I did it real... I shortened everything. So I have to do that. Anyway, Nate, what do you say we take a break, bro?
Let's take a break, sir.
All right, man. Sounds good. It's your show. Anyway, listen, guys. Each week on this show, we play a band we know, we love. We support the little man on this show, right, Nate?
That's right, we do.
Tonight's band is Fragile Thomas. Let's just go ahead and play Apollo Aniqua. Ready?
Okay.
All right, guys, we're going to go to break. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Brad Dourif, voice of Chucky, and you're listening to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show. Sorry about that, guys, during the break. We had a little bit of a problem. But tonight's guest, he is an American actor known for playing the character James Hurley.
Hold on, Ben.
In the cult television series Twin Peaks and its prequel film Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, as well as his role as Private Luton Downey in A Few Good Men, he's appeared in numerous films, among them Gladiator, Hits, Vibrations, All She Ever Wanted, Criminal Affairs, and Alien Lockdown. He's also known as the voice of Kurt in the video game Unlimited Saga and so much more. Please help us welcome to studio the motorcycle riding man from everyone's favorite mysterious town, Mr. James Marshall. James, what's up, brother?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing outstanding, man. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
We thought we didn't get you there for a second.
Yeah, it was like fly by night real quick, but we're good.
That's good, man. Thanks for coming in on a Sunday afternoon. We know how crazy it is out there in Twin Peaks land, dude. Nathan's starstruck.
Yeah.
Well, we're crazy about you. Huge fans, man. What's going on out there?
I was expecting any moment to start hearing your answering machine answering backwards masking there, you know, just morph, morph, morph.
Yeah, exactly. It almost probably would do that.
It's, it's demonic.
it's going good. Thank goodness. It's like, you know, it's been really nice out here on the West Coast lately.
Yeah.
Got really, really, really hot for a little while, so it was pretty unbearable, but had a little bit of heat today, but it's like nice out here.
Yeah, I don't know. West Coast, too hot, man. And we're Midwest.
Of course, you guys have had a drought for so long out there that any heat just means grass is going to die.
Yeah. I mean, it's like really, really crazy. But you know what? I mean, it's like things are changing, though. I mean, it's getting a little bit better, you know. So we'll see. We'll see what this year brings. Everything's on the West Coast has been looking better weather-wise and stuff lately, though. So yeah. I'm just trying to put positive into it because, yeah, it has been dry for really long.
Well, James, you're an amazing actor. You've done some amazing projects, brother. And, you know, I had a question for you. You've done video games, too. Is that something that happens in between films? A lot of the video game companies come to a lot of actors
sometimes,
and say...
Sometimes.
Yeah?
Yeah, sometimes. But I do got to tell you guys, that's a misprint. I didn't do the voice for that.
He gave me bad information.
I've not done a video game. No,
you have not done a video game?
No, I was offered a video game a couple of times a long time ago, and I didn't do them.
Do you know that your bio on a lot of different stuff comes up and says you're the voice of Kurt?
Yeah, I know, and I had corrected every time, and somehow it's relentless. It doesn't correct. Something in a computer has it somewhere, and it's committed it or something. Along with, I also starred in Growing Pains or something. I never co-starred in Growing Pains.
You did?
But yeah. There was two misprints, so...
Well, see, the Growing Pains one could actually be helpful. I'd keep that one on there.
Yeah. He played Alex before Alex. Yeah. Well. No, man, but, you know, how did it, you know, a lot of people, they know you from your movies. They know what's going on. They see you at these events. How did you get started in film, man?
Basically, through the auditioning process, mostly in L.A. is what it, you know, that's what... Most actors get their thing from that, you know, but occasionally there's people who get lucky and, you know, it's done through either friends or nepotism or whatever, but, you know, it's usually.
I was trying to figure out where that noise was coming on from my end.
Sorry.
Are you in an alien ship?
You know why it's doing this?
Why?
Oh, I see. Hold on. Because it knows I'm on the phone.
Yeah, exactly. It knows you're on the phone with us.
Yeah. So,
you ever start thinking that modern day life is way too much like it was in Twin Peaks?
Isn't it funny that we get to see this sort of transition that show was before the computer, before everything? Yeah. It was like the last little deal that was before everything. It was we shot it in 89. So that would be right before. That would
the
be right.
Explosion.
You know, just yeah. as, yeah, just because the computer started kind of soaking into the consciousness of everybody around that time. So it was like it was just sort of entering, and now, like, what has become of everything is sure, you know, it's pretty wild, pretty huge different thing. But so, yeah, it's an interesting thing that you get to see the difference between then and now, you know, within the show itself. So we'll see what the tone is like. And plus, yeah, that was, I don't know, that whole period was so different than it is now. I mean, I was noticing on something on Facebook, I think it was, that it was like the last generation is about the past of the people who were brought up without the internet and all this, you know? So it's like, it's kind of weird. There's going to be all these generations now who have all just been brought up with all this.
Wait a minute. Isn't that our generation, James, that we grew up? We didn't have internet for a while, man. What's going on? Are we old people or what?
Yeah, we're old now. Oh. We're the last generation of normalcy.
Yeah.
We're the last ones of who, like, what does it say? Everybody born after 85 is basically soaked with all this stuff.
Yeah.
Born before 85, yeah, you still got your you know, recall, yeah, to the whole, you know. But it's like I grew up on the East Coast, like where you guys are, you'd know this. Like,
right.
I grew up where it was much more Huck Finn. It was like, unless you're living in the city, I was in New Jersey, it was like you walk down the street and into some woods, next thing you know you're in swampland, you know.
Where in New Jersey, like, there, James?
Bergen County, like northern Jersey.
Oh, see, I was a Sussex County boy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I was there in the woods.
Yeah, that's like all, it's like beautiful. It's like,
it's cow country.
Swampland. And,
yeah.
Yeah, and it's like super lush and super green and super, you know.
Nobody expects that,
like,
in New Jersey.
Appalachian.
Yeah.
I know, and it's a little known fact that New Jersey is one of the most beautiful places on earth. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, with how beautiful the farmland is, and you go outside of that area, and it's getting, I know that it's getting sort of industrial now, more so, and it's becoming that way, but the countryside of New Jersey is just crazily beautiful, and it's so diverse. It has swamps, and then it has mountainous regions, like the Appalachian vibe, and it has, it just has, and woods, just everything, and then it has, like, you know, farmland, and long, sprawling, you know, flat areas, you know. It's just, it's a really neat place. But anyway, I grew up, like, you know, being able to take my bike and go flying into the woods and go, all of a sudden we'd build a raft and stuff out of junk and stuff, and
Huck
just go
Finn.
Float that around on the swamp and stuff. And then, and now everybody's literally, like, the kids in this area where my kids growing up and stuff, it has nothing but, you know, I mean,
they build a raft on Minecraft, and then they,
yeah, their heads are inside of a piece of equipment permanently, and I'm like, go outside, you know. Yeah. I mean, I grew up like I was saying this to somebody else, it was like there was that dilemma of, well, what do you want to do today? Well, what do you want to do? And then, but you'd finally get into doing something, you'd finally, your imagination would take off, you'd probably go do something similar that you did the day before, only it was a little different this time. You made the jumps this way with the bicycles, and this way you did this, and then this way. But now it's literally, yeah, now growing up, the kids, by the time they're 10, they've got, because of course they cheat, probably, you know, and go look at everything. And you're talking to little kids and stuff who are just so clued in to, like, everything, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, oh boy, you know,
they're gonna get
crap. They know
the next generation is gonna have little chips inside their head that when you say, what's the capital of this, they're just gonna be able to hook up to the internet and tell you.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, it's crazy, and it's just weird. It's like, yeah, so part of me likes it, and there's such a huge benefit from it, and then part of me is just like, you know.
Yeah.
It's a little scary, but I just wish that, like, you'd see more of the kids, like, you know, the way I grew up. Yeah, it had its downside because there was more danger involved, but there was more life involved, you know. It's like, it was like people were, it's just strange. It's really strange. Kids really do, everywhere across the board. Even 10-year-olds will sit there, like, you see a 10-year-old in a waiting room with his mom, and for 20 minutes straight, you won't hear a peep out of him. His head is just staring down at a screen.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, basically, it's similar to where we were raised. We were allowed an hour of TV a day, or 3 hours a day, or whatever the heck
yep.
it was. And it's like the kids now get to carry their TVs around, you know? So.
You kids were basically so oppressed, you and Nathan, James, because I got unlimited television every day. God.
I had a 12-inch black and white TV screen that got six channels.
Yeah.
if it was a clear day.
Yeah. Well, James,
but
listen.
I did too. I built the raft out of like wood and old barrels and went down the stream and stuff like that. And if you think about it now, when I think about it, you know, there you are going around in like swampy waters that probably have quicksand around them. And
we had to deal with that. There was one time. Have you ever dealt with the mud out there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we really got in trouble a few times. We had to run back for help. We had to get sticks and pull kids out because they would literally, because if you start freaking out, it behaves like quicksand and it starts, you start going under. And it's like, yeah, we would have to pull kids out. And I've had to be, it's really scary. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. Go ahead.
Nowadays, the area that I grew up in, when I was a kid, I spent my days out in the woods. And now if you were a kid out in the woods, you're sure to run into like bears.
A clown. A clown.
Yeah, a clown.
Yeah. Or Pokemon people.
Yeah.
No, have you heard about the clowns, James?
Yeah, what's going on with that? Is that an East Coast thing or is that all over?
You're the actor. I was hoping you could tell us. Is it you,
It's spreading. It started in South Carolina. Now it's in Ohio. Sean recently heard about a possibility in Indiana. And it's just spreading. The clowns are out.
It's like the clap. It's everywhere.
Wow.
But, you know.
Yeah, the thing. Go ahead.
Go ahead, James.
No, I was going to say the thing with that is like, whatever, it's like these mean things that catch on or whatever, and that people have to copy each other, and they go out, and it seems to me a lot of these, it's like that dangerous zone between like 14 and 18 or something, where you're just ready to go do anything, and to have a computer to facilitate all this stuff, like massive clown terrorizing problems, it's just too much.
It's a gang.
It's all internet related.
Oh, yeah. The clowns are communicating. No, you know, but I was gonna ask you, James, because that, you know, you brought up at the first that you're West Coast. I just assumed you were a West Coast boy, and that's how you got involved in it. Me being out here in Indiana, Nathan being out there your way or East Coast way. You know, I grew up watching the ABC Weekend Special, and it would be. Did you ever hear that ABC Weekend Special?
The ABC School Break special, I knew. The Weekend Special?
Yeah, it had the Weekend Special, and they would showcase a book, and they would take the book, and it would be young guys, like in our age, you know, late 70s, 80s. And these young actors would portray the people in these books, and it would make kids want to go out and read. At least it did me, right?
Oh, got it. Yeah. Oh, I kind of do remember. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what my connection was to Hollywood. I always thought, oh, my God, how do I – all these magical places are in Hollywood. I need to get there. But I knew being out here, and especially since we had some luck with Hollywood ourselves, I found out being out here, the market sucks. So how did you, growing up, I mean, what happened? How did it strike you, and all of a sudden you're in Hollywood?
Oh, it had to do, I think, with a couple of different things. Like, it was really kind of strange, because initially, like, I was born in Queens, and then we moved to Jersey when I was like around seven. So initially I would sneak up at like midnight, because I was always, literally since I was like 3 years old, I just always stayed up really late. I like being up late and thinking and all this stuff. So yeah. I would wait till my parents went to bed, and I'd sneak up and I'd turn on the little black and white TV and I'd watch like old movies till I was like six or seven almost. And then I remember when we moved, I stopped doing it, blah blah blah, because of our new house the way it was laid out, it would have been way harder for me to sneak. So this was easier. I was closer to the TV. Anyway, I got this whole education on all these old movies, like, and I didn't even like know who Montgomery Clift or James Dean or Marilyn Monroe and all those people were. Yeah. I just knew them, I saw them, but as I grew up, as I 10 years old and then 11, and people would show me pictures, or I'd see things, and it would be like, you know, oh, that's James Dean. Oh, okay, that's the guy that was in that movie where he got oil all over him and stuff. I love that. Okay, cool. And you know what I mean? I got this whole background on things, and I kind of, I don't know why I was drawn to it, and I wanted to do it. And then coupled with my father was a fundraiser for theater groups for like dance and off-Broadway and plays. In that, he met Martin Sheen before Martin Sheen was famous. And when I saw that this, at the time, my dad's best friend was Martin, and he was going and doing these plays, and then he had a guest spot on like a TV series, I was like, oh, you can do that? You know, okay. You know, and it made it like, oh, I'm going to do that, you know. And so from then on, I said, that's what I'm going to do. And coming out to L.A. was my folks, basically, when I was like 14. They moved out. My father wanted to become a producer. And we moved out, and basically I went to an acting class, and I had help getting a SAG card through my dad. That actually did. He had helped me in the very beginning. Where nepotism fails, unfortunately, is it depends on how big your nepotism circle is. Like, unfortunately, like he was able to help me get a few things, and it really did help in the beginning. To get a SAG card was really important. Yeah. But other than that, I kind of had to get out there and get my own agent, you know, and kind of, you know, fend for yourself a little bit, you know, because, you know, it's a weird deal. Hollywood doesn't really, it's not forgiving. You know, I mean, even if you are brought in the door, it's still very unforgiving. So that's basically it. I went to an acting class, and I got my agent through somebody at the acting class. And
next thing you know, you were on Murder, She Wrote.
That was my very first line. Was on Murder, She Wrote. That actually was a favor through my father as well. So that was my first. That's what got me my SAG card. That's what got me into the industry or into the union. So my dad knew a director named Arthur Seidelman, who before the actor's thing, James. Anyway, he does all the actors, interviews them and stuff. There was a guy named Arthur Allen Seidelman, and he used to do that. He used to interview like really big legends and actors and stuff, and he used to have a show like that. Anyway, he also used to direct TV. So, and my father knew him. So he said, could you help out and help me get my kid his SAG card, and da da da, and I did. And I had my first line on Murder, She Wrote, and it was one line, and it took like probably four takes to get the line audible. I was so nervous. I was spitting out the line like 90 miles an hour with a blank jaw. It was like, I don't know the name of the campus bookstore.
Cut.
A little cut. Wait a minute. Calm down. Take a breath. I can't fucking believe I'm on TV.
I'm just excited to be here.
I'm on Murder, She Wrote. You know, so I was like nervous as hell. So.
Hey, yeah. What about school and stuff?
Yeah.
Life of a young actor.
Say that again?
What about school and stuff? Life of a young man in the acting biz when you went to school. How was that, how you were treated at school? And then once you did Murder, She Wrote and started doing more stuff, how did it happen at school? Were the kids different towards you? Did you get picked on, or were you the big guy?
No, it was more along the lines of, it's Southern California, and they are so blasé. I mean, you literally would be. Like, I went to Santa Monica High School for a while.
Yeah.
And they literally, you could be sitting next to some, you know, huge movie star's kid, you know, or some rock star's kid or whatever. Yeah. Nobody gives a crap. They're like, whatever. So if somebody goes and stars in something, they're like, oh, all right, cool, whatever.
Right.
I think you're a star now, huh? You know. So they're blasé about it. And as far as when I started working, it was actually way after, you know, high school.
Right.
So I because I looked younger, so, but initially it was after high school.
What did you do? What was some of your first jobs before you got into the acting biz, before it really, you know, spun off?
Basically, I was restaurant stuff, usual actor stuff.
Yeah.
Like delivery stuff, restaurant, you know. I did that for years, you know, long time.
You'd be amazed how many people we have on who will ask them that question. They're like, well, I cleaned trailers. Yeah. That's how I tried to make connections. I had to work, so I got a job cleaning actors' trailers.
Mike Rooker. Yeah, Mike Rooker.
Yeah, Mike Rooker. That's what he was doing.
Yeah, that's a trip. Yeah, no, I already basically, it wasn't about that for me. I didn't have any delusions that I was going to make any connections doing my minimum wage job, you know? So I just kind of just went and did it to make money. And so that I would have to go, and a lot of actors would have to do the restaurant work or the real grunt, lowest level work. Even if they want to promote you, they can't, because you have to, the one clause with you as an actor is that you got to be let off at any moment to go do an audition. Yeah. So it's like, you know, they'll have you, it'd be whatever, they'll have you working at some restaurant, but the one thing will be, if I get an audition, you got to just let me off, I got to go. And they're like, cool with that, as long as you're cool with your flexible hours and all. You know, if you could be there and a good worker, they let you off on that. The other jobs they wouldn't let you off on, the higher paying or the upper, you know, you had to be there. You know, and they were like, oh, you got an audition? No, you got to be at the meeting or you got to be at the thing. So, it was a strange thing. So for years, all I did was that kind of work and just auditions. And that's it. Just auditions.
Well, it's really funny because, you know, we try to always avoid politics on this show, but I remember one day sitting around with somebody and they were talking about like the argument of, you know, immigrants stealing jobs. And they're like, which Americans really want these horrible jobs? And I was like, actors, because we need jobs actors. In between gigs. We need a job where we can go say, hey, I'll do that for a day.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, true. Coming up, man, when you were watching the movies, when you were there in front of the TV, you're a late night guy. So was I ever since I was a kid. I would stay up late, shove my fat little chubby face with fudge rounds and play Nintendo and watch late night spook movies. When you were growing
up,
that was it. That was it for me. I still do that, actually. Sam. No, I still
now you're, now yeah. Your daughter just sits up with you while you do it.
Yeah, it's Twinkies now.
Yeah.
What was your favorite type of movies? Was your genre? Was it horror? Was it drama? Westerns? What got you?
Well, I mean, my thing, I loved, I liked stuff that was something soulful, something like that. When I was younger, I did the horror, but I was little and it was late at night. So I couldn't, you know, being that little, you know. But as I grew up, it was everything, basically. But being that little, if there was really scary stuff, I'd literally go to bed, I wouldn't watch it or whatever. But, mostly it was things like, bringing back that other thing about, like, James Dean and stuff. Like, I love watching old movies like Giant and things that had, because there's something about James Dean's presence, it wasn't even his acting ability, whatever, and I'm sure it was his ability, he was very good in a way, and da-da-da. But it was something about his presence, his attitude, and the way he handled himself on film and what he was doing, and it was captivating. There was something about whatever he was doing felt like I was watching somebody privately who was going through these little moments, and he was doing stuff without any dialogue and bringing you through these little things. Like, he would turn around, go grab something, and then pour something in it, and then look at it, no, that's not enough, pour a little out, and then grab something else, and meanwhile, like, you know, Liz Taylor's walking up to his little shack, you know, and he's like, you know, and it's just the whole thing, just everything, the way it worked and the time they took back then for moments and stuff like that. And not to be anal and freaking pretentious about it, like, oh, our moment. And that's also wrong. I'm not talking about that. I mean, to genuinely really let stuff fly and really take chances and let things go on. And that and Montgomery Clift had that kind of thing. And, movie-wise, I think I was more drawn to any kind of drama like that had really good actors and good acting in it like that, or a captivating actor in it like that. And I did actually, I mean, I remember seeing like Marilyn Monroe and stuff when I was little, and Humphrey Bogart and stuff and all that stuff, but mainly it was like, I think I was more drawn to the on-the-waterfront kind of, you know, drama.
I don't know, African Queen will always be one of those ones that sticks in my mind.
Thank you. Exactly. Like that with Katharine Hepburn yelling at him and shit. And he's like, those movies were epic and they were really just too, they generally they had everything because they started with the guts of the people. They started with what was going on with the people and stuff. They started with the heart and the storyline and what was going on. And then from then they expanded it out to this vast sort of cinematic, you know, like opportunities for these great shots and everything, you know. Yeah. Like in Giant, the shot with him coming flying up with the in the old pickup truck across the field in all the oil because he finally struck oil. Mm-hmm. And like the shots of, like you said, an African queen where he, you know, but he struck oil, and why it was such a pisser is because he was getting back Rock Hudson. It was a big fuck you.
Yeah.
Rock Hudson, oh, yeah. Know? And that's what was like, that's what was so exalting about watching him bounce across the field in that thing going, and he's going, I'm a richin'. Like, he's dancing around and all that. And he's like, it was, but that's because you, so look at what you had. You had the cinema scope, the whole thing with him flying across the field and the pickup truck and the colors and the, you see the big sky. And, you know, so it was very cinematic. Yet you had the whole storyline pull through the whole thing of what he was doing all at once.
Yeah,
you know, so that movies aren't made like that anymore. They don't, you don't care about the character that way. You're not like, oh my god, like it was a pisser when he came running up and did that. Oh, and in African Queen, you had those shots of the boat, you know, coming up the river, and you see what's going, you see the steam coming out of the thing. It was just very, you know, it made you feel and it put you there, and it like. You know, it just doesn't do that as much nowadays, you know? I mean, that's one of the things I was, like, really blessed to be a part of A Few Good Men, because that was one of the last of the big, you know, big scope movie, you know, broad scope movies. You know?
I loved A Few Good Men on stage, and I loved it even more when I watched it done in the movie. And I got to ask, did you at that moment realize I've made it, because for the rest of my life, I'm part of the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon?
The Kevin Bacon thing is the reason it doesn't matter that all those other people were in it, but the movie was. Seriously, it's the fact that I was 1 degree away from Kevin Bacon. Dude, not even just a degree away. We actually jammed. You played guitar in my trailer. So I was
That's awesome. Away. Yeah. And every you looked day. So scared when he was yelling at you on stage on the screen.
I know, the best is that we'd like, you know, do that, and then you turn around and go, I was, you know, he would beat me back to my trailer. Like, I'd go to my trailer and he would be standing at the door in his, like, you know, the things, I forget what they're called, the khakis, you know.
Yeah.
So he'd be in his khakis, because we'd have to go back and continue it in a half an hour or something. But he'd be standing there with an acoustic guitar. I'd come walking, all right, let's go.
I think he's going to be in town here this week to play at the Ridgefield Playhouse. He's playing like at a band or something.
He does that a lot, yeah.
James, you ever worked out on a project? I just want to know what it's like, because we've done reality TV. We haven't made it to the bright lights yet, you know, with the acting roles in a movie or anything. Like you, when you first started out, and you're going on the screen with a lot of these greats. I mean, the projects you've been on when you very started out, I mean, a lot of these actors and actresses are going to go down as legendary, right? Or they were already legendary. Jack Nicholson, Kevin Bacon, all these people. When you're on this set, do some of them, like, walk me through a day on the set. What was one of your...
Are you intimidated at all while you're out there?
Do they give you any kind of heat, some of them? Like, he's a young guy when you first came out, you know?
Yeah. one thing, I kind of did with Nicholson that was... this is a story I don't even really tell, which is whatever, because it really is kind of...
G&D exclusive, but, everybody.
This is it.
to answer your question just broadly, just, you know, it was like everybody was supportive. Everybody was far cooler than you might think they would be. Generally, what I found is when you get into the realm of the A-plus list actors and the ones also who are really good at what they do and the veterans, they have the same attitude as the people starting out. They're usually very humble. They're usually easy to talk to. Surprise, almost scarily easy to talk to. You forget you're talking to somebody, and then you jump out of your body for a second. You're like, wait a minute, I'm talking to
him. I'm a superstar.
Like, holy shit.
I have heard from people, though, that Nicholson likes to mess with the new guys.
Yeah, so what he did, though, and I kind of froze. It's so embarrassing. I wish I would have slammed him back with something, because he kind of looked at me like, oh, I scared you, didn't I? You know, because it was like, I was a little intimidated. We came to our first, it was like our first read. They had a read through of the entire movie in one of the sound stages, right?
Yeah.
And we all get there, and it's like there's this long table that they put into one of the sound stages, a long wooden table. And you got to imagine, it's an empty, like, a big sound stage is like, it's just a big room, gigantic. Basically, it's like a gymnasium with padding on the sides of it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you walk in, and it's like there's just a long table in the middle of this huge room. It was really surrealistic, because it had every huge star and legend that's basically now right there at the table. Because not only was it the ones in the movie, but they were bringing people there to shake hands. It was like Bruce Willis, because he was with Demi Moore. You know, would come in and shake him. So you'd see all these extraneous other huge people, you know? So, yeah, I walked in. I was, you for a second, you forget you're in it, and you're just there looking, you know? I was like, wow, you know? Yeah. And all of a sudden, somebody talks to you, so it's like, oh wait, I'm not dreaming. Okay. You know, it's that kind of feeling almost. It's a very surrealistic, especially for me, because I was literally just, I very much was just starting, you know? So, and, we all sat down, and I sat down. We did a part of the read-through, and then everybody got up during the break and left, like, for, like, 20 minutes for the break. And they all went outside, made phone calls or whatever it is they did, and Rob Reiner, Jack Nicholson, and a few other people stayed. And they just sat there. They didn't even get up. They just kept talking. And I stayed along with Wolfgang, the guy playing opposite me, the other guy on trial. Uh-huh. So me and Wolfgang were sitting there. And most of the room left, and Jack turns to us. And that day, the day before he had seen us, we actually had rehearsed the day before, and we had met. We did 3 days of rehearsal. And I guess this was the second day, because the day before I showed up, my hair was normal. This day, I, you know, shaved my head, like, almost bald completely.
Yeah.
And, like, so at the end of the read-through, everybody leaves, and Jack looks over, and he goes... He goes, you look like a newborn chicken. And I go, I looked at him, and I started to smile, and I just froze. I was like, ah. And then he goes, and he was like, hey, yeah, I guess so. He kind of sounds like a newborn chicken, too, because I couldn't talk. I was like, you know, he said something and smiled, and I kind of smiled, and that was it. But it was the classic, you know. Like,
you just wish wish you had the sense at that point to look at him and say, that's very nice coming from a pecker.
Coming from a real, you know, pecker like you. Yeah, no, it's like, yeah, it was a neat thing.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say he was very nice as far as, you know, being able to talk to him. All these people were very... personable and like, you know, Jack, what I noticed, because I've been on movies also, like, where you got a lot of the more medium stars, they made it big, but they never made it like Nicholson or Kevin Bacon big, you know, but they made it big. They're people you'd know.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this like chip on their shoulder half the time. It's like, how big's my trailer? Everything's about, you know, trying to still make your stamp as you're the star, you know, and all this. And it's like, I never liked that, and I never bought into it. But watching people act like that was almost, that was basically like the medium movies.
Isn't that crazy?
Like, and then when you do the big A-list things like that, you get a whole different set of class, basically.
Where everybody on stage is pretty much, or on the set, is a star.
Also, when you're that big of stars, and also I do believe the reason they get to be that big is because they are... they're kind of delivering something from the heart is the reason why they get that big. Most of them, they're not from the heart. Though I don't mean to sound like they're it's Pollyanna. I mean, when they act, they tend to act from the heart. They're raw who they are. They're not putting on an act or trying to be a star or trying to be anything. And I think because they are so authentic in themselves, that's what makes them get to be that big, and that's why they're embraced the way they are, along the lines of, like, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Han Solo. Why can't I? Blanking on.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Han Solo, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
No, I can't think of him.
Are you trying to remember his name in real life?
Indiana Jones, yeah.
Harrison Ford.
Ford. Harrison Ford. All three of us.
Right. I
was sitting there going, "Wait, are you trying to? Were you trying to remember? You just said his name. You mean Harrison Ford? Okay, I get that."
Exactly. Yeah. But like, it's like you got Harrison Ford, Paul Newman. You know, there's a lot of actors. Just they have so much. They are who they are, and they carry themselves like that. And in real life, they're like that, you know? They look you in the eye, and they don't... In other words, I watched Jack Nicholson talk to the extras and stuff with the exact same respect and tone as he talked to everybody else. He wasn't like... There are actors who literally diss people, you know? And it's like, it's really creepy, you know?
So, oh, yeah, we've met them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, what...
But,
when you were on Alien, when you were on the Alien... was it Alien Outbreak? God, I just had it.
Alien Lockdown.
Alien Lockdown. Yeah, Outbreak.
That wasn't something I was very good in or proud of, so.
Well,
that was pretty bad.
Being on the film, The Shaft, stuff like that, when you're in those horror movies, you know, how do you prepare for a movie where you have to be scared or anything like that? Fearful of anything, like a horror movie. You wouldn't prepare the same way as you would a drama, right?
It's a weird thing. It's actually just turning up and turning up the volume on what you normally do in dramas. Because I think acting, one of the things they say is that good actors tend to be vulnerable, okay? If you can get to a certain vulnerability, really what they're talking about is if you can allow yourself to be kind of scared. Because we don't realize just in our relationships with people and in day-to-day activities, if you were to film it, and break it down, you're actually very nervous through half the things you're doing because you don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
You know? But when you film a movie, everything, obviously, scripted, da-da-da, the challenge is to make this thing where you know exactly what's happening next to seem like it's not going to you don't even know what's going to happen next. You know, this is life, you know, and you want it to seem alive and feel alive. And you don't want to go the other way and make everything, you know, do this acting exercise thing as your way of acting. Then that scene, you don't want it to be see-through. You don't want to be seen doing it, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
But it's more along the lines of acting is like, it is scary. I've heard good actors say that if you can deal with your own demons and if you can deal with your own fear and stuff, you can become a good actor that way.
Yeah.
Because it's a hard thing to kind of talk about or put into words, but it's...
I tell people all the time, embrace your demons. You know?
Yeah, well, you do. You get, you know, either that or you become a victim of it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's embrace your own truth, you know? And in life, we are vulnerable. We're vulnerable to day-to-day things. When we talk to people, we don't know what they're going to say next. We don't know what's happening next, just in everyday life, you know, at the market, wherever, you know. So it's the kind of thing where, like, you want to turn that up for a horror movie. You want to turn that up huge to where, you know, you're kind of it's in a state of fight or flight all the time, you know, which can actually, you know, that you can bring out some pretty good performances, you know, because, you know, that kind of, you know, terror brings you right into the moment. You can inadvertently do a good performance. So,
yeah. I've got to ask you, Twin Peaks. Was James lucky at cards? Because he certainly wasn't lucky with the ladies. he had a lot of bad luck in there.
James, basically, the situation with that is it has to do with his whole private life, basically. They don't talk about it a ton, but his whole private life was basically like really abusive. And he was basically neglected to the point of he raised himself basically. And he was pushing women away because even though he seemed to be I mean, he was vulnerable and he was kind of a mess also, but he was also kind of like the guy on the bike who kind of was like, you know what, ultimately, I don't give a crap. I'll just go be on my own. I'll just go.
Did you use your early interest in James Dean to grow his character?
No, that's the thing, is that it was weird because, you know, I can't, if you imitate people, it looks awful for me. If I start mannerismed James Dean, I would have made a clown out of myself. I would not, which already in doing what I was doing was pushing making an idiot out of myself, because it was already, it was one of those things that was a wink, though, you know what I mean? The character is a wink to James Dean.
Yeah.
So it's in a realm where it has this sort of, it's laughable almost as, the character is almost laughable as it sits, but it if it really works right, it shouldn't be just laughable. It's that's what David Lynch does so well. It is that it takes it to a dreamlike area where it makes you giddy. It's like the character is almost tongue-in-cheek, but not quite, you know? And then when you realize he's heartfelt and real, you get it, kind of. But, yeah, no, he basically was having a hard time in life because he was pushing everything away because he was looking, even though he didn't act needy or want, he was actually super needy, you know, which is going to be the last thing girls are going to want or anybody's going to want around, because he wanted something from the women. He wanted like the comfort and some kind of validation from women, you know?
It's funny. I was prepping for tonight and I enjoyed Twin Peaks, but I wanted to talk to somebody who was like a real, like, let's face it, there are fanatics over Twin Peaks, the people who love this series. So I sat down with my friend Charles and I said, what was it you loved about Twin Peaks? And he's going on about it. And finally I said, okay, how would you categorize Twin Peaks? Was it horror? Was it sci-fi? Was it this? Was it that? And he couldn't tell me. What would you categorize it as?
That's what's so cool about it. You can't put it in a box. So, yeah. I mean, it has, look, I mean, the X-Files spawned off of it. There were so many shows that spawned off of Twin Peaks, and it had to do, there was an element of UFOs in the show, and there was an element of everyday life stuff in the show. There was everything, you know. So
I was watching it thinking to myself, why would anybody ever go back to the Black Lounge? There's too much weird that goes on there.
that's the thing. It's very, you know, very nightmarish, but that's where it gets into where you could say it's sort of like horror or sci-fi. But our life is like horror or sci-fi in a way, because if you want to look at it like that. So really, to me, Twin Peaks is like taking what life is and somehow, you know, kind of putting it in a way that we can sort of, I don't know, it's hard to explain, putting it in a way where you're not being spoon-fed anything, I guess. Yeah. The way I could say it.
I know Living with My Ex-Wife was like a B-list horror flick. It was terrible. It was freaking awful, man. I should write a book. Yeah. But, you know, it's funny because, and this is, I got two things for you, actually. I just wanted to tell you, when we were doing the reality show Extreme Paranormal, we went to the sound studio, James, and you've done this a billion times. I had to do my voice over while I watched it on the big screen. You know, we were running through the woods or something, and they're like, okay, you know, act like whatever. And I hadn't been professionally trained as an actor. This is my first time. I have a pretty good voice, and I could do some voiceover work. And they had asked me to do some things on the show, and I, of course, I had to do my own, which was hard, you know, doing my own. But we were running through the woods or something, Nathan, and I was sitting in there around the guys. I had two other co-hosts. And I screamed real loud. I was like, oh, my God, you know, run over there. Get out of the way. And I was so proud of it. And I remember they hit the cue up and they talked to me in the little sound room. And they said, okay, I think you should dial it back a notch. They said, and I was so embarrassed after that. I felt so weird. I didn't know what to do. You know, do you ever
have weird how we get?
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God. Oh, I went and did a little too. It's funny how, like, I'm the same way still, even you're an actor, dude. You shouldn't have that. You know, it's like I still get, like, we tend to judge ourselves so much, and it's like they're like, no, that was too over the top. So, no, good. That's good that you did that. So it's better that you did that and then bring it back than not be able to get there at all. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I just remember when Sean and I were doing that there was a scene where I was talking and I mentioned one of the cameramen, and they didn't want us talking about the cameramen at all, but they loved the scene. So they wanted me to re-record what I said and match it up to my lips without mentioning the cameraman. And I was just like, mm-hmm. Isn't there a shot from the back of my head you can do this? Because that's never going to match.
Yeah,
it's weird. They'll try to get things to match, and it's amazing how close they can get, though. They can doctor stuff to where it does look pretty good.
Oh, yeah. They can do all kinds of Hollywood
magic.
Dude,
there's so many different aspects to production. It's funny.
Hey, James, what can you tell our listeners about the return of Twin Peaks?
Nothing.
Oh, that was there's your exclusive, everybody.
Well, we look on IMDb and it says, you know, that the first episode is in post-production and that you're in it playing James Hurley. Is it like, are
it
you returning?
That? Where does it say? Does
on
it say
IMDb.
That? I don't even know.
Yeah, it's on IMDb.
I'm in the first episode playing.
Really? That's what it says.
I cannot confirm nor deny.
Episode 1-1, Twin Peaks TV series, post-production, James Hurley. So it hasn't. You haven't even filmed it yet.
Hopefully they didn't get that wrong.
Apparently they're using clips of you from the original.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
They are.
That means I cannot say anything else,
gentlemen.
I was
going to ask, are you excited to go
back
to
Twin
Peaks?
I'm sorry, excited for what?
Are you excited to go back to Twin Peaks?
Well, that's basically, we already shot everything. I'm just not allowed to, I'm beyond amped about it. I think it's super cool. I'm just paranoid to say anything because we're on a non-disclosure. We're not allowed to say
We understand non-disclosure totally. Believe me, we're not going to try and get anything out of you.
That's why he keeps asking you questions, James.
they've made this public already that you're in it playing James mm-hmm. Hurley. And I just want to, already.
Yeah, so that's what that's the only thing I'm allowed to say is that I'm in it and I'm in it. And that's it.
I'm in it to win it, baby.
I'm not even allowed to say, I could say I had a good time. Yeah. And that's it. I'm not allowed to say.
It was a hoot. Anyway, James, I got one last thing to ask you, and then I'll turn it over to Nathan, brother. But we do paranormal topics on here. We do horror genre. We do a lot of actors. And I got to ask you. Have you ever had any experiences with the paranormal, aliens, UFOs, anything like that? What's your thoughts on that, the world of the paranormal?
I've got some whole things with, you know, that kind of area. Probably take you like two more shows to get through. Start on that. I had a place up in the mountains once, back in the 90s and up in the Santa Monica Hills and at the very top of the mountain. And it's called Boney Ridge, and it's at the county line in Malibu. Mm-hmm. And where Ventura County line meets Malibu County line, way up in the hills. And it's like stuff goes on up there that, like, it's pretty neat. I mean, it's also kind of unnerving. I saw a bunch of stuff. I saw like, literally, it's weird to talk about. I want to only say this one deal is that, and me along with this other guy who was driving up the hill. I was driving down at about 1 a.m, and he was driving up. And we stopped and we looked and for a split second, as I'm driving down the hill, I went, oh, it's a nice sunset. And I went, idiot, it's 1 a.m. And I stopped and I looked, and it was this gigantic orange. It was like this amber orange kind of cigar shaped, diamond shaped, gigantic thing that looked like it was teetering, hovering on one of the hilltops. But as you're looking at it, you realize it was over the ocean, over Point Magoo. So, and it was huge. And the guy who was coming up got out of his car too. And he was like, he goes, I've lived here over 10 years. I've never seen anything like that. That's a UFO. And he couldn't believe it. We sat there looking for 10 minutes until it blinked out. It did this weird thing where from corner to corner, it just went, and then a few sparkles, and that was it, just completely gone. It was really weird. And on top of that, I saw a bunch of flying, like, stuff going overhead, too. That was, but I can go on and on. There was, like, a whole bunch of experiences I had up there, which was, like that. Just very, very, you know, like, really took, really changed the way you look at things after you see stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
When James and I met, Sean, we also had an interesting conversation, thanks to somebody else who was standing around, about our pets returning to us after they die.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's,
Yeah, no, I was going to say there was this... we had a dog once that when he had to be put down, he didn't want to be put down, but he, you know, was a big dog, and he tried to take a bite at one of the kids. And he was kind of going, he had like a hole in his head. He literally had, he had something wrong with him. And he would, he was starting to get more and more aggressive. And he was, you know, a big, big dog. And we ended up putting him down. He was older, da, da, da. And the night we got home from putting him down, the chandelier, there was this like sconce, like chandelier thing on the ceiling. And we watched it unscrew. It unscrewed and fell on the floor.
Wow.
That was like, jeez.
You think?
You know, the one thing, if it just fell, it unscrewed and fell on the floor.
You know, we've researched this stuff for years. I mean, years. And I grew up in a haunted house, and Nathan had stuff happen to him, too. But do you think the whole ghost stuff, do you think it's like we think, the dead rise, and all of a sudden the lady in white's walking through the room, and she knows everything that's going on? You know, she sees you, you see her, you're scared. Or do you think it's like time overlapping itself?
Dimensional or something,
or just
like
a playback. Like some people believe it's residual. The energy from a house stores human energy from past and plays back. What do you think?
It's probably all of them, I would guess. I mean, it's like you probably have a few main ones that go on. Like there are these weird things that seem to be tape loop kind of ghost things, where it is like a tape loop, and it's almost like they don't know you're there, and it's almost like this little thing that happens during the day or something, this one little thing that'll happen during the day. And then it seems like you can't interact with them or help or talk to them, or there's, it seems like it's a tape loop, in other words. And there's other ones that seem like they're present. And in fact, they are present. There's something present there, and it can't move on, or it's upset or angry, and it doesn't like what you're doing with where it lived or something.
Yeah.
And with my situation, when I had a situation like that, I literally had to get somebody, because there was a point, and it messes with your head.
You literally,
if you have a haunting or something going on that's negative and stuff, it's terrible, because it makes it so that literally when you walk away from your house, you still feel it. Like it's affecting you psychologically and stuff. It's awful. So if it's positive, or if it's just somebody there, that's one thing. Or if it's a dog, or, you know. But yeah.
Well, unless it's a like, dog that drops chandeliers on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that was angry. Shaggy.
He was angry because he didn't want to be like, put me down. You're not going to get rid of me, you know.
Right.
But that's what it felt like anyway. But no. When this was all happening, it just seemed, you know, it just is like not fun. So I just I was lucky enough to know somebody who had a friend who literally was a shaman. They literally really were. They weren't, you know, they weren't doing ghost hunter stuff. They literally were a shaman, and they came to the house and cleaned the whole house. And I gave him, had to pay him a little bit of money, and he spent more than half the day at the house. The reason why I know it was real, it stopped completely. You felt the change happen after he got done, or while he was doing it, and after he got done.
Yeah.
None of the stuff ever happened again. But not only that, a guy came up to me, and there were some situations that happened in certain parts of the house.
Right.
Like, there's different parts of the, there's different places where there's more of a likelihood for portals to the other, you know, like corners of rooms, things like that.
Doorways, that kind of stuff. Yeah, I find a lot of stuff happens in doorways.
Yeah, exactly. And so I had this one issue, and I won't go into it because I don't even want to give it life. But there was this one issue with one thing, and it was really, really, really bad. I mean, like horrible vibe, bad thing that happened and not good. And it happened in this one area of the house. And that's where I saw it, and that's where my wife saw it, and, you know. the guy comes up to me afterwards and he goes, I found the portal, and tells me exactly where it was and exactly what came out and exactly what. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, yeah. And he described the thing and everything. And he told me where, and he said, it's gone. It's fine. You know? And yeah, you literally, like when you said you got to embrace your demons, literally the way, because this whole time I was like, how do we get rid of this? Get rid of. He literally said, what you have to do is respect them. There are these elementals, and there are these things that sort of have been here and have lived here, and this is their property and has been their property. You also have ancestry here from Native Americans who have had things gone on here against them, that this is still their loved sacred land and all that. So there's a lot of stuff going on in the ground right here. And he said, you got to love this place. All you got to do, you see all the plastic? You see all these pieces of old kids' toys that from generations ago, from people who lived here a long time ago, that dug into the grass? Pick up this blue piece of plastic, because to them that's like poison, and it's an affront. So I walked around, and I just cleaned up the property. I'd see like a little anything plastic or non-natural. What eases them, not to get into the whole thing, eases that this situation was to honor what they actually like lived like and were, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to say, oh, this is how they were when they were here, so I'll keep it like this. And he had me put this little box, this little birdhouse like box in the back of the property. And every so often I would come in, I'd go up to the box and put in offering, just like, you know, literally I would put in like a tiny bit of food or something. And it was just the action of doing it, and to them, and it, he said, that's all they want, is acknowledgement that you're living on their property, and to thank them and to also honor it and start to respect it. If you do that, they'll leave you alone. Because I don't even want to get into what was going on. A, I'll sound like I'm for real lying, because you can't even believe it. It really is stuff like this in the movies. When it was happening, I was like, this can't be real.
Well,
this cannot be. This, you know.
You got to become. Like, you got to come back on, because that's what we do on this show, man. Listen, you wouldn't believe
yeah,
me.
But it's like,
you wouldn't believe me, James, or Nathan. Nathan got, while we were doing a show about the Dybbuk Box, it's America's number one haunted artifact, he gets beat up. I mean, he's talking to me. He starts getting whelks all over him, stuff like that. We got pictures of it. And then the next day, my car gets struck by lightning sitting in the driveway, and a bunch of other stuff happens. You know, this stuff happens. We believe you, brother. We're like Ghostbusters. We're ready to believe you. We will.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, it's a type of thing, though. I really like, I just don't want to call it into, you know.
No,
you don't want to give it power by talking about it. That's,
yeah, that's all. And I do respect the situation that they have and everything. So it's like, you got to remember, and it is partly what you're saying too. We're sharing. It's also not only that it's ancestry that lived there, because the shaman mentioned it too. It said it's like a sharing, because it is the ancestry that lived there, but it's also the dimensional, to the interdimensional that is still living there.
Wow.
And it still has its place in a different side that you're affecting. You know, my
so you actually do live in Twin Peaks. Okay, I get it.
There he is. Yeah. He can't talk about it because he lives it.
That's for me. That's why when people say Twin Peaks is weird, I'm just like, do you not, like, my life is like Twin Peaks.
You know, it's funny because we're all talking now, and you mostly hit, when you're in the research field or you do entertainment, anything to do with paranormal, you meet a lot of skeptics, and they say, oh, that can't be, this didn't happen. And when you grow up with it and you meet other people that aren't crazy, you know, after a while, you're like, yes, it can be, it happens, you know? I don't know how people don't understand.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I know, it's like a trip.
Yeah,
a lot of people, though, and for me as well, it took a leap. Like, it did, because I thought I was already kind of brave enough to deal with a lot of it. And then when I really saw a lot of the things, it didn't make, I got freaked out. I mean, I wanted to, you know what I mean? I just really wanted it to go away. Like, I wasn't like, you know, it's like, it just can be overwhelming. So, in the end, all it comes down to is just, you know, being aware that it's there and stuff. Most people are not going to turn and face something that's like, they don't, you know, it's like, yeah, they don't want to know. They're like, oh, no, it's so uncomfortable for most people.
It is.
You know, it's like, yeah, because it's like, that's the weird thing. I think that's the big wake up that's going on right now. It's like, they need to get out of themselves. It's like, get out of yourself already. It's not like this whole place isn't just for you. It's like, there's other things here. There's other stuff here. And it's not all, you know, what do you think? Where do you think you go when you sleep?
You know,
you're dreaming and you're actually, you know. So there's a whole other realm. There's other realms. And we'd like to not think it because it's like this realm is hard enough to deal with half the time. So it's like, but when you realize there's other realms and stuff, you get an expanded, expansive view of everything. And you get to, even though it's scary, Twilight Zone-y at first, it's sort of like, you know, it's just like, come on, you know? I mean, what did you think this was going to be like, you know? We got pulled out of a person, you know, and then onto a ball. Mm. We're on a ball spinning in the middle of space after being pulled out of a person, and we're sitting here in these, you know, bodies that we're not even sure why or what, and, you know, so the whole thing is phantasmic from the beginning in a way, right. You know? So people don't want to go there. They want to stay comfy, cozy, and not think about all, you know? So, yeah. No, but you got to, in other words, you got to be somewhat brave to, like, look right at it. You know, I'm not, like, always, like, that way. I'm, like, wanting to run, too, sometimes. So next, I understand why people don't.
Next week time, on, like, James Marshall, the Haunted House Hunter. Yeah, that's my new show.
Yeah, really.
Anyway, James, you're amazing. Nathan, what do you got for James, man?
I just wanted to throw out there, James, that with everything you've done, all the different shows, all the different... you know, I had a question lined up. But pretty much, you just answered everything by talking about us. And we know Twin Peaks is coming. 2017 is the date that they're aiming for. You know, I just want to know, what are you looking forward to next? What comes after Twin Peaks? What are we going to look for in, like?
Well, right now, like, I've been doing music for a while, but I haven't put it out. Like, I record stuff and I keep it to myself. I haven't put anything out yet. So I think I may put out something if I feel like it's up to par enough, because I don't want to just be, you know, Mr. Actor Musician guy throwing stuff out there and blah, blah, blah. But yeah. I think in the next couple of months or a little while here, I'm going to make an attempt to put some, just to see how it feels, see what goes on. Like you were saying about Kevin Bacon, you know, it's like he's going around and playing all these places. If I'd love to do that. Because I don't need to go out and be the rock star guy, you know, like, oh, well, I would love to be able to, like, I love playing guitar. So I would love to be able to go play some places and stuff and do that, you know. With me, that's where, like, I have guts enough to face down the ghosts and stuff and all this stuff. And, you know, I'll stay up there at my house on the hill and watch the freaking UFOs while everybody vacates the properties around. That's where I could be brave, but with certain things, I get a little freaked out. I mean, doing music, getting on stage, doing all that. I used to do it. It's fun, but I haven't done it in so many years. And I don't know. I think something like that, there's also another movie that I'm really interested in. And I don't know what's going to go on with it, but yeah, there's something that kind of looks really interesting. But
well, if it requires two radio hosts, remember to tell them about us.
This is a strange and weird.
Okay.
We always get that answer, Nathan. Okay, we'll tell them. Then
yeah,
we never
sure,
get a phone.
We'll tell.
Well, if you get the role, James, which I hope you do, you got to come back on, brother, and give us exclusive.
Yeah, thank you. I definitely will. Thanks.
All right, bro. Can you stay on the line 1 second while we close out this show?
Yeah, absolutely.
James. Shadow Nation across the world.
What do you think, Nathan? Should we pay the bills?
It's time to pay the bills.
It absolutely is. Guys, James Marshall, A Few Good Men, Twin Peaks, and so much more. Hey, special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Spreaker, the world's listening. How about you? Geeky Antics, geeky fun, geeky people, geekyantics.net, Attentive Home Healthcare, good people ready to help the ones you love. Check them out, attentivehhc.org. The SYL Project. Give some love, share some love. Everybody needs that love today. Check them out, SYLproject.com. From the haunted back roads of America, this has been another exclusive G&D show interview. Don't go changing America. You know we won't. Demon Hunter.
Because we love you.
Night, guys.